We'd like to welcome you again to another episode
Love Talk
Ooh.
Radio.
As we often say, we will claim no hard victories and tell no lies. We seek the truth that will set us free. Tonight we're going to be discussing, basically having an open topic. We have two guests with us tonight. They are Brother Haki and Mr. Emmanuel Joyner. They're going to be addressing this question that Mamaba Gay addressed to us back in the early 70s. And that question was, what's going on? We'll be getting our perspective on this issue, what is going on, and later on, if you would like to participate and share with us what's going on from your perspective, you can call in at 323-697-0841. Press and foremost, right now, we're going to talk about this issue, what's going on. We're going to address Marvin Gaye question. We'd like to start with Mr. Joyner. Give us just a little brief introduction of who you are, and we'd like for you to share with our audience from your perspective, what's going on.
Yeah, my name is Emmanuel Joyner from Raleigh, North Carolina. I know my perspective for what's going on. Marvin Gaye. And we've got quite a few things going on in the political arena. Of course, we had what happened yesterday in Libya and Egypt with the ambassador getting killed along with three other diplomats. And that's being investigated, of course. That happened on September the 11th. So we're still not at a wilderness with people doing certain things in the world that the countries are being punished because the people is where the power is and always will be. And the democracy is the way to go. There's no other way to go other than the democracy. Also, what's going on, of course, the voter suppression in 29 states with the ID being suppressed, which you voted with before. You can't use that anymore in these 29 states. You vote 60 years. Very difficult to get voter ID. But we're working on that through grassroots type progression. We're going to overcome this. And we have to understand what's going on in this country. It's about voter suppression, all because we have African-American president. But you can see their true colors are coming out. Exactly. Very difficult. When the slaves tell the slave master what to do, that is a huge problem. And that is our problem. We call ourselves Americans. We call ourselves, Californians, New Yorkers, Mississippians, Floridians, Floridians, Texans. But look at us. We're in shambles. We're our president's pigmentation and who he is. So, again, we have to make choices. Everybody knows what the right choice is. Everybody knows that. Again, that's what's going on in my world.
Okay. Brother Haki, can you introduce yourself to our audience and give us a perspective from your world and tell us what's going on in terms of addressing my Marvin Gaye question?
Yeah, I've been involved in community struggle for the last 28 years throughout the country, particularly the Northeast and in the South. And in respect to the question in terms of what's going on, I got to say, Brother Lee, my concern is when I look at these Democratic and in particular the Republican primaries, when I look at the kind of vitriol that's been expressed on the airways, it gives me pause of concern. I understand in terms of the political process, there's a tremendous amount of pontification, a tremendous amount of lying that takes place, and that is understand. But the nature and the quality of the lies, the hatred, the vitriol that exists in terms of the kind of stuff that's been expelled, gives me real concerns. one of the things is that with this increasingly cooperation between the so-called Republican Party and the wealthy class, it begs the question in terms of whether or not fascism is here and whether it's here to stay. My position is that, in fact, fascism is here. Even though formally fascism is defined as government and political cooperation, it's supposed to be in two separate spheres. In fact, they work together as one. That would be the academic definition of fascism. But in the context of America, the way the system is structured in terms of the empowerment of the 1% at the expense of all others, it's particularly dangerous when you not only empower these individuals in terms of economically and politically, but you make it possible for them to actually use their wealth to affect elections. And this is a particular concern. Now, the demagoguing of African people in society is particularly troublesome. In other words, by them painting African people as simply esoteric or worthless, then it begs the question, if in fact our people are esoteric or people are worthless, then the question is, obviously, what do you do with those people who are esoteric? You have no use for them, so what do you do with them? So I think when we look at history in terms of, particularly when we look at fascist Italy and the Nazi Germany, and we've got to be very, very concerned in terms of the potential for great large-scale abuses to take place, in particular in terms of destruction of people on a wholesale level. And so I think that's something as a community, I think that's something that we've got to be concerned about, and that's something that I implore people to think about very, very deeply.
Okay, I think we just have another guest just came in on with us. Do we have Brother Bambo Shishango?
I'm here.
Say hello to our audience, and our theme tonight is we're addressing the question that Marvin Gaye accessed in the early 70s on what's going on. So for your perspective, can you just introduce yourself briefly and address the issue of what's going on from your world?
Well, my name is Bambo Shishango. I'm an organizer. I've been an organizer for the past 45 years. My perspective is one that says, as black people in the United States, the solution to our problem is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under an all-African socialist government that Kwame Nkrumah, Sekou Touré, and Kwame Touré spoke about. What I think is happening today that our people need to be aware of is a very interesting situation where yesterday the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi was attacked by what we would tend to call the rats, those mercenaries, those thugs who were organized by NATO and the United States to overthrow the legitimate government of Libya, yesterday killed the U.S. ambassador to Libya, and it's probably a case of the chicken home to roost, or maybe even the rats biting the hand that spawned them. I think that it's interesting that we look at this one because the Secretary was correct when he said imperialism will find its grave in Africa.
Okay. It's interesting in terms of going to Mr. Joyner. One of the points that you made in terms of your presentation, what is going on, you talk about this issue of voter suppression that is going on all over the country, that's going on. In terms of this whole concept of voter suppression, Mr. Joyner, What is the real basis, or who are the real forces behind this whole concept of leading this movement as of today when it comes to voter suppression? What do you see, what is the real issue behind this whole thing?
Now, the leader behind the suppression, of course, is the GOP, the Republican Party, and that's a known fact. It's only one side of the aisle. It's not Democratic at all. It's all one-sided, all Republicans. It's the Tea Party. And I call the Tea Party actually Ku Klux Klan dressed in suits. That's who they are. As I explore voter suppression. I was been around a long time and worked so hard. My grandmother, and she died 104 years old, and she did the same thing, trying to get us, she did all type of voter drives, and there were poll taxes and everything else. You had to count beans on a jar, all this kind of stuff, just to vote. But that vote was meant basically for African Americans that particular time, and it's still today. We have an African American president who is brilliant. He's beyond smart. He's brilliant. He knows he knows what's going on, and that's the good thing. He knows what's going on. And again, being 14% of the population, we can't do a whole lot, and not at 14%. Not at 39 million people. We cannot do a whole lot. We're not dispendable, but we're just here, and we have to understand that. A lot of things we cannot change. We can change this voter suppression thing. Again, just get ID'd, do everything they asked us to do. But again, we have to stand up and get a backbone. That's our problem. We don't stand up. We have this fear. Same thing with Africa. They have this fear. That's why they suppressed. And again, I'm talking about 1 billion people being suppressed by a few million. That's, you can fight for 40, 50 years if you aren't fighting for the right thing or know what you're fighting for. And again, economics is the key. They don't allow Africa to manufacture things they don't allow them to do. They're not going to do it because they're colonized. Same thing with South America. Because of that, and the same thing with the voting that's done here in the United States of America. We have to fight. And we got to stop skirting the issue. We have to come and directly say what's going on. When I say the slave, telling the slave master what to do, that's our problem. They don't want that. 90% negative news is done on black people because we don't own the media. We don't own the right thing. We need black economics. We need black voting power. And we have to stand up. We don't stand up for ourselves because of fear, because they own everything. We need them for a job as the Woody Legislator says, make sure that they depend on us for everything. Every need, we depend on them. We got to find a way not to depend on them for every need. So we got to build up our economic power along with our voting power. And we have to vote. We, every black American, African American, has to vote. I don't care if high or high water your next door neighbor, but I don't care. Because if Republicans get in, you're going to see some things you never saw before. You thought remember Herbert Hoover, how bad he was. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. See, again, okay. We know who's lazy. We're afraid to say it. I always say it. If you were smart, you didn't need no slaves. If you worked for it. Who worked hard and don't have anything for it? Slaves worked hard for 375 years, don't have nothing to show for it. Didn't get paid. That's where your welfare is. Who was on welfare? Not black folk. You working somebody and don't get paid. 375 years we didn't get paid. So these are the things that we have to actually speak out about. We speak about the wrong things. We had words like welfare. It was corporate welfare, $340 billion a year, opposed to individual welfare, which is $14 billion a year. Let's talk about welfare. But put some numbers out. We never talk about numbers. We just a bunch of rhetoric people. Put the numbers out. Average black person's Social Security gets $800 a month. Average white person gets $1,400. Let's talk about entitlement. Who gets what? Who gets the food stamps? Average white person gets $485 for food stamps a month. Average black person less than $300. See, these are things we got to put out there. You're the one getting welfare. You're the one getting welfare, not us. So you got to count the numbers. You got to put numbers out there. If you don't put numbers out there, you can forget it.
Let me stop you for a second, Mr. Jordan. I want to go to Brother Hackey for a second in terms of his presentation. Brother Hackey, you mentioned something about living at a time where the people are no longer valued. There are no more need for the people. Can you maybe look at this conditions and see any other historical parallel conditions may have been similar to the conditions we live in now, where there are sets of people who may not value the needs of other groupings of people? Let's say, for example, the Nazi had a similar philosophy where they felt like that certain people was expendable. And if people are viewed as being expendable, what are some of the social consequences you think may manifest from that? What is your projection of those possibilities?
Well, I think in the context of a capitalist society, when it comes down to the bottom line of productivity, then you understand that some people in the minds of capitalists produce and others are non-productive. In the case of non-productive, obviously their existence in terms of being able to contribute to the capitalist system is null and void. And so therefore you're not really needed. Now the question for the system is in terms of how do you go about eradicating those you don't need. My position is that at some point they're going to have to be very brazen about in terms of how they go about doing it, where they actually, where surreptitiously the government would finance or the welfare of the government and all government would finance right-wing groups like they did in Central America to go around and actually kill people who advocate for change, people actually stand up. So I think the pressure is growing increasingly for that kind of thing to take place. I think in terms of, there is a parallel between Nazi Germany and fascist Italy and what's going on at this point in time. The question for our people is whether or not we understand the implications in terms of what's going on and our response to what the fact is going on. Now, we talk a great deal about organization. Organization is good in theory, but in terms of, the pragmatic speaking, there's a lot we have to overcome in terms of organization. This issue of is one of the things we really have to address. Too many of us, particularly the most violent of the upper strata in the African community, are of the perception that, in fact, they've got it made because they got a house, they got a car, they got a few bucks in the bank, and the perception is that they got it made without ever understanding that all our destinations are intertwined. And that's because we operate and we live in the context or the pretext of a capitalist system, and we can never lose sight of that.
Okay, going to Brother Van Boshi, I'd like to raise this issue in terms of your presentation, talking about the connectedness between Africa and the Africans born here in America. You mentioned Len Kwame Nkrumah and how he viewed this issue of this question of looking up from a global Pan-African perspective. If Nkrumah were living today, how would you think he would address this powerlessness in Africa, and how could he, or how would he attempt to get Africa out of the plight that is in now, as relates to the powerlessness of Africa in Africa as well as throughout the world, i.e., particularly the U.S. How would you think would be some of the programs that he would advocate addressing in order to overcome these shortcomings right now of our people?
Well, I would tend to speculate that Nkrumah would at least struggle for, as he has done when he was alive, a United States of Africa. But even more so, I think he would struggle for a all-African military high command to replace what we have now, these individual military groups representing these individual flag independent countries. I think that Nkrumah would probably struggle for a African banking system that would give to Africa preferential loans at reasonable rates, unlike the World Bank and the IMF. I think Nkrumah would struggle for some form of continental-wide educational and health system that would create a better life, a better quality of life for the masses of Africans. And I think that Nkrumah would be on the forefront of linking up with progressive political parties, regimes, organizations and countries throughout the world. And I'm sure that his position has always been that the Africans, no matter where they are in the world, including in the United States, would benefit from a United States of Africa, so I'm sure he would work hard for that. Of course, this is speculation, but it's speculation based on advancing the philosophy that he has pushed. So in that sense, I think that Nkrumah would see a world where black people would benefit from the United States of Africa, especially the uniting of its resources, and its resources going towards the benefit of Africans all over the world.
Okay, Mr. Joyner, and I'd like the rest of y'all to join in on this fundamental question. And this question is dealing with this question of lack of economic base. I think I heard you, Mr. Joyner, when you stated in your presentation, they said one of the problems we have is a question of economics. We don't have the resources or the money.
Well, that's the big problem we have in Africa. Africa has 97% of all the resources in the world, basically. They're all there.
Yes.
And everybody uses Africa's resources. They have to find a way to basically say, well, you know something? We're going to keep our diamonds. Africa is the richest continent in the world, but the poorest. We have to reverse that.
How are we going to do that?
And I can show you how to reverse that. They have
the strongest military in the world.
They don't sell them any weapons. Being an aerospace engineer, I worked for aerospace and worked for space station for almost 25 years of my life. Our contracts never spoke to Africa. The weaponry, it was never in Africa, regardless. They basically say, well, Morocco, Egypt, Libya, Middle East, they're African nations. We have to say that. And again, natural resources, we have to find a way to harness that. We got to find a way to say, you know something? We're going to do some sanctions. If we can't get good water, irrigation system, health systems, we're going to nationalize all the companies here in Africa. They don't allow Africa to manufacture. You got one country in Africa, Ghana, is the only one that has not been in any type of war, a crisis, this type of thing. The rest of them, again, you got one airplane goes into Africa from Britain. They own them all 54 states, all 54 countries. They own them all. So we got to find a way to pull sanctions. If you have 97% of the natural resources, I mean, you have the diamonds, you got the emeralds, you got the oil, we have it all. And what do? You give it away for peanuts. The thing is, you know something? They need to meet. And so this is what we're going to do. So we got to get infrastructure there. China's coming in with the largest projects right now ever been in Africa. They're coming for the thing that everybody else has come for, to rape Africa of their natural resources. But just think, if African manufacture, they're not coming in to create jobs. They're bringing Chinese workers there along with them. They don't want you to learn anything. Just take your natural resources. This is their key. So Africa has to get together. Know something? We're not do this anymore. We're going to do this. We're going to get paid for our natural resources. Nationalize the companies up in there, and they're already poor. They're already poor already. They're already hungry. All they do is drop rice, stuff that constipate them, basically. But they drop it in there. The water is terrible. How are you going to clean the water up? Got to have someone disease causes the water.
Okay,
so
let me clean
that whole thing up as an Africa concern. And first you got to put an economic base. You got to get a banking system. You got to get the same thing that Saudi Arabia, the Middle East has, what has natural resources, also have the oil. Look what they have done. Africa should have countries look like Dubai with all the natural resources they have. You can't even have a zoo without Africa. Just think. How many zoos? No, girl. But you don't have anything without Africa. Can't make one. You can't make hardly anything without Africa. Not one thing. One piece of metal. You can't make any paint without Africa. Can't make hardly any pharmaceuticals. All the healing plants that go in medicine, basically, are there. And they just rape it. Pfizer rapes it. Upjohn Laboratories. These are the companies that are in there that's raping Africa by the barrels. And they give them zero. They give them nothing in return.
Let me hear your take on economically. How would you address this economic deficiency as it relates to African people? What would be your prognosis to the people today?
First and foremost, before we can get into a serious discussion of economics, I think we're putting the horse before the cart. I mean, the cart before the horse. I think what we have to do is that the struggle for us is have to be a political clarity. That's what we need first and foremost. But see, it's easy to talk economics, but unless you have an understanding of what to do with the money that you accumulate, then the only thing you end up is doing is working against your own interests. So you have to have that political acumen, that says that we have an understanding of the world and we understand what we have to do. So the struggle has to be first a political struggle in terms of clarity. Then once we get an economic foothold, then we can begin to empower ourselves economically. But I think one of the misnomers is that we tend to put the economics before the politics, and I think that's wrong. I think the problem why Africa is undeveloped is because Africa too is following similar models in which they put the economics before the politics. As a consequence, Africa is consistently being marginalized and co-opted. So I think the politics is very, very important. Now, one thing in terms of respect to Africa was very, very interesting. Just in terms of investments in Africa, according to the World Bank, it's something like 0.3%, 0.3%, 0.3%, actually goes to Africa in terms of investment. So we're talking about a little over $3 billion for the entire continent. Now, excluding Egypt, not talking about Egypt, because Egypt alone gets about $4 billion a year from the U.S. in terms of investments. The problem is that even though Africa gives a tremendous return on its investments, Western nations, for reason of imperialism, continue, to work for to ensure that Africa remains developed. So the thing is, in Africa, America, the struggle has to be one of first politics, political clarity, and then the struggle for economics.
Okay, we got about 30 seconds, 35 seconds for each person. In terms of closing out the topic tonight on what's going on, and we address Marvin Gaye's question that he stated to us in the early 70s. And closing out, siding with Bamboji. Then to Mr. Jordan, then to Haki. For our audience who are listening to this program, what is the one thing you want to remember the most as we look at this question, what is going on right now?
My brother, it takes me 30 seconds to open my mouth. But no problem. I think that today the greatest problems that we face is, one, the problem of disorganization. And in that sense, I'm talking about not just our people being organized, but our people being organized into revolutionary and progressive organizations, because we have many organizations. We had the Oogum Boogum Club, we had you name it. But we need revolutionary organization and we need progressive organization. And to have those, we have to raise the level of our political consciousness. Unless we do that,
I'm basically for economics. We've been having politics too long. That's the problem. The political thing gets in the way. You need to do what you need to do. You got to grow a backbone. This is what we're going to do. Politics has always been not been our strongest point. And that's what holds us back is politics. We have to stop talking about politics. The thing is economics. It's all about the money.
Okay,
it's all about
Mr. J. 15 seconds, Haki. What would you like to do?
Well, in terms of economics, if you look at the African American community as a group, we're like some of the eighth biggest GDP in the world. So the economics is not an issue. The issue is in terms of how you organize the monies that you do have. But you can only do that once you understand what it is that you're up against concretely. And that's all I have to say.
We'd like to thank everybody for watching Listen to Africa Don't Move. Until next time, let's continue to struggle to find out what's going on and join the fight. We thank our guests tonight.
Thank you.
So let's scratch forward ever and backwards never. We thank Brother Bambouji, Brother Emmanuel, and Brother Haki. Thank you.